This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, the podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Whitten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio. Now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 104 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we've devised the perfect podcast for you all to listen to. But in order to get it to work, we're going to have to wipe all your memories, plant helpful objects in strategic locations throughout the recording, and occasionally put our voices through a modulator to lead you into thinking there's someone with an actual plan running this amateur operation. I'm the brains of the operation, Jay Whitten, and with me this week is GPR's equivalent of Q, the mind behind all our amazing gadgets, Haley Malley. How are you tonight, Haley?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you tonight, Jay?
I'm all right. And also the man with just enough charisma to pull off a heist like this. We call him Face. You know him better as Keir Hansen. How are you, Keir?
I'm caught in this harness. Hold on. I'm hanging upside down. The blood rushing. Good as always. Rock solid. We've got a job to do tonight. Tonight we're gonna get ourselves all Danny Ocean and see a new side of the Doctor with a little bit of a wibbly wobbly time manipulation, some good old fashioned running from monsters down corridors because we love doing that. As we look to review the fifth episode of Series 8 titled Time Heist. So now that the good Doctor Peter Capaldi is now comfortably settled into the title role, as far as we can estimate here, we're getting more of a sense of his personality. The Doctor's cooperation and symbiotic relationship with Clara, and the sorts of adventures that the two of them can get into when they are not pursuing a major story arc. Some people might say that not pursuing a story arc for a little while is a good thing. Others want to get back to it, but you know, decision is up to each person. So let's get safe-cracking.
All right. So what did everybody think about this episode, first off?
I thought it was an okay middle-of-the-season fun episode.
Okay. Yeah, this was, I mean, you can always tell from the first couple of minutes if it's one of those things where he pops in and says, I need you for a thing, and they're up, a thing yet to be determined. It's like plan yet to be determined. You're, okay, this is going to be an adventure episode, and I got a kick out of it.
I've heard the term romp thrown around again, and that's the thing with the romp episodes, is if they don't catch you within the first couple of minutes, you're going to spend the entire time tearing it apart. And I mean, thankfully this one did manage to get me right up front. Like I don't think that there's a single episode so far this season that the cold opening hasn't gotten me. I mean, they've all been great. And this one was no exception. The Doctor just completely oblivious to what goes on with the date. You know, why is your face all colored in? Are you taller? Do you have to reach a high shelf? That was great.
People are really starting to come around to, as I've been seeing some of the tweets fly by, some folks in the first couple episodes weren't really certain about this very callous treatment of Clara. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he just, was it a matter of the fact that his ego is so large that he doesn't notice? Or is it just a matter that he doesn't care because he's very single-minded? Or is it just a selfish thing? Or however you're particularly pointing, you know, or devising it within your head, it's just riddled with these little snipes and these comments that just, you see him just hanging there, and sometimes it hits her. Mm-hmm. And she catches it, and other times she's able to kind of brush it off and just, you know, ignore him or explain him away. You know, Sai calls her out on that in this episode. Right. But it's definitely something that is written into their relationship now. And all the writers who have, you know, grabbed the pen so far have said, okay, that's the way they're going to be. Okay, we're going to write this in intentionally. I don't know. Do you guys think it's getting to be a little bit much?
You know, at first I did. At first I really did think that it was going to be too much. And then it just kind of fell into the role of part of their relationship. And I think that it's happened enough that it's become a comfortable thing. It's like, you know, it's, I mean, I've, today I was doing the same thing. I was poking a lot of fun at my friend, and my wife was like, why do you do that? Now I have to go behind you and fix it. I'm like, no, he's a guy. This is how friends react sometimes. You know, it's just you poke at each other. But if anything was actually true, then you're a little bit more careful with it. But yeah. And then I think that this kind of showed, you know, especially with the whole thing with heels, like, you know, him just completely oblivious to why the heck are you wearing shoes that make you taller? Do you have to reach something up high? Yeah. And I think that just kind of proves that it's not so much that he's doing it to jibe her or to get at her or anything. It's just that he doesn't understand why anyone would take offense to it.
We had one of the friends of ours, Jeannie, was actually noting this a little earlier today and was saying how some of the things that seem to elude him, you know, the when he starts acting very alien or just sort of not in sync with what we would think to be common sense, just from simple observational skills or what have you, or just a sense of compassion every now and then, was a matter of the doctor figuring himself out in tandem with the audience. I thought that was a kind of an interesting point, the fact that the audience is really learning him, he's learning himself too. So, you know, we're getting to sort of go through that journey with him to a certain degree. I think another layer of that, though, has got to be the fact that that's just the fact that they had been telling us all along as the lead up to the series. You know, through the summer, they were saying you're going to get, well, along with talking about the darkness of everything, but they were going to say he's far more alien.
Yeah,
he just, you know, he doesn't always get humans, and this is part and parcel of it. You know, and if you think about all the species and everything that he's seen, and all these civilizations, I'm sure a number of them have footwear that elevated themselves a couple of inches off of the floor. But the fact that he throws this stuff out is just. I don't even know the right adjective to apply to it. It's not callousness. It's just, he's just not picking up on it because his brain is 50 feet ahead of where the conversation is.
Yeah. And I think that that's what it is too, is it's not that he doesn't care. It's not that there's anything inherently mean about it. He's just, he doesn't have the time to think about it. Mm. Ironic, but whatever.
So we get right from the jump. We know that, you know, within the first minute and a half, we're going to be dealing with something where everyone, including the cast, has been put in a disadvantage because there's been a memory wipe.
Right. And we got to see the memory worms again. Yay.
Yay.
I'm just mad we didn't have Strax to crack any jokes about it. Hey, sorry, see, I've been run over by a cab.
What I don't know is how you ever accidentally pick one of those up barehanded. Like
the soldiers.
Who's just going to pick one of those up? Like, ew, gross.
It's amazing.
I don't care if I'd be in the middle of bank vaults. I'd go find a stick so that I could just kind of put,
or a salt shaker.
Scoop this over in the corner.
They look like big slugs.
With fangs.
And how do you ever let go of them? Because don't you keep forgetting to let go of them?
True. Well, as soon as they come to the realization that they, because it'll do the wipe and then clarity kicks in for a second. And I think they all kind of flipped out and threw it down as soon as they realized what they were holding. So, and then overanalyzing the care and handling of memory worms. Moving on.
This is important to know.
Yeah, we're already into minute two of the episode. Let's go.
So did anyone figure out from the jump that the doctor was the architect? Because I've heard a couple people saying, oh, no, I knew as soon as it popped up on the screen that it was him. And I may have figured it out before the official revelation, but I didn't figure it out that early.
Yeah, because I wasn't really trying to solve it. I was just trying to get a gist of what the backdrop for the episode was. So I wasn't really trying to take apart, you hear the voice modulation. You know, oh, well, this is clearly got to be somebody in the room. But I wasn't even working on that level.
Yeah. Haley, what about you?
Yeah, I wasn't trying to figure it out the first time either. But the second time through, I could hear the Scottish accent through the voice modulation. I was like, oh.
I noticed there were, when he was speaking, there were things that just didn't sound right, even modulated. I'm like, well, that wasn't modulation that made that sound that way. That was speech pattern. But I didn't give it enough thought. I was just like, wow, that sounded weird. Moving on. I do have to say, I absolutely love the visual aspect of this. Douglas McKinnon, the director, just, I mean, he did this one and he did Listen last week. And I love this guy as a director. I want to see him come back. There were stylistic choices that he made that I just absolutely loved. Like the slow-mo entrance into the bank Mm-hmm. I mean, that just, that fits so well in that moment. And it could have very easily been cheesy or overdone, but it, I think that it worked so well right there.
That has elements, though, too, of sort of, you know, tipping the hat to the heist films that this mm-hmm. episode was giving so much to. You know, you think about when they're casing the joint and everything's done slow-mo. And in keeping with that also, and I'm sure you've noticed it, there were a lot of use of a lot of instrumentation in the scoring that Murray Gold put into it this week that just had so much of that kind of jazzy Rat Pack, you know, kind of feel to it. But it was still notably Gold score, you know, it would take his styles, but end up using an instrumentation or a choice of instruments that sort of gave it the that very Italian Job or you know, Great Escape kind of heist film feel.
The only time that the music really stood out to me, it sounded more James Bondish. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that you've got similarities, obviously, but like that's really what stood out to me. It was at one point I remember listening specifically to the music, thinking this sounds exactly like something out of James Bond.
Well, it's all based on that 65 to 69 or 72 or so film period where heist films were at their, you know, at their peak. I mean, they were cranking them out, and, mm-hmm. and you were also getting the Steve McQueen films, and Bond was absolutely the box office blast. So
yeah,
they set the tone for all of these.
Yeah, I do have to say that when I first watched this movie, this episode, I was disappointed at the end. Like, I enjoyed it all the way up until like the last 10 minutes, and we'll get into why later on. But part of the reason being that my son just got me hooked on the show from, I think it's on TNT. It's called Leverage, and it's okay. Every episode, every week is a different heist or a different con, and it's very cleverly written, and it's cute, but it's not overly serious, and it's a fun show. But they do put a lot of thought into how are we going to structure this, and then how are we going to reveal it at the end. And so you can figure it out early, but there's still the fun of seeing it actually play out.
Right.
And that's kind of what I was expecting with this one. And it wasn't structured that way. And it wasn't anything bad. It was just that I've kind of been mainlining that one. So that's what I was expecting. And it didn't fit. And it seemed like they crammed all of the explanation into, you know, a 45-second chunk at the very end.
I don't know. Tell me what you think of this. I kind of saw this as what they were attempting to do was by using the memory manipulation and a little bit of play with time, mm-hmm. they basically took a heist film, but they were also treating it as a detective story at the same time, because you had a hidden character that needed to be revealed in order to pull off the gig,
mm-hmm.
or in order to finalize the gig, I should say. So you had both of those things running under a sci-fi backdrop. So, you know, the fact that if you were to get it a little earlier in something that only runs 45 minutes, mm-hmm. then what are you doing? What's the justification for what's happening within the last now 5 or 10 minutes of
it? Well, it seemed more like when they used the memory worm technique was that you were putting the characters on the same level as the audience. Nobody had any clue what was going on. Like mm-hmm. you see from the same moment that they do. Exactly how it is. So you can learn along with them, and there's no big, like, hey, this is how we pulled it off moment. It was just the doctor realizing what had happened at the end. And it, like I said, it wasn't what I was expecting, and it just kind of irked me a little bit. But it's, when I went back and watched it the second time, I was able to enjoy it a lot more because I didn't have any weird expectations on it.
Okay. Haley, how'd you pull from this?
I don't know. I mostly enjoyed it most of the way through. A nice moment, I thought, was as Sabre was, quote, dying. She said, a good man. I left it late to meet one of those. And it seems like several times this season, they've called the doctor a good man or a hero or something along those lines. And I'm really thinking that's going to maybe play into a bigger thing towards the end of the season.
Well, that was a response to a line that was catching me as well, because I was just coming off of the fact that a few minutes earlier, when the one guy in the middle of the bank floor had when the teller turned his brain to soup,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they were looking at the doctor to do something, suggest something, and he said, oh, he's already gone. There's nothing you can do for him. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, okay, they're going to continue with this kind of quick write off, just like the soldier in Into the Dalek. You know, he's already dead. He just doesn't know it yet, kind of thing.
Right.
I thought, well, all right, you know, it's an interesting choice that they're doing with us right now, sort of making him far less of a universal caregiver kind of thing, you know, where he wants to, you know, jump into the fray in order to save a single life. It's just not the case anymore. But then here we are, you know, fast forward by 5 minutes, and she, you know, she's facing her demise, and she says to the doctor that, you know, we have to figure out who the architect is. You have to promise me that you're going to kill the architect. Mm-hmm. And he says something where, you know, I hate him, but I can't make any promises. I can't make that promise. Mm-hmm. And that's her response is, you know, you're a good man. You know, maybe it's one of those things where, you know, you're better than I am, because if I ever come face to face with him, I'm going to take him out. That sort of response. But again, it seemed kind of inconsistent within the same episode that, you know, he resigns this guy to die. But if he comes face to face with whatever villainous character that, you know, as we think at the time, has set him up to all this, I still can't morally say that I'm going to kill him on sight.
Well, there's a difference. He couldn't save the one guy. I mean, the guy was already guilty, and that was, you know, there was nothing he could do to save him. And, you know, if he were to kill the architect, that would be a choice to, hey, I'm actually going to actively take part in this instead of writing you off because I couldn't do anything anyway. Mm-hmm. And, but beyond that, the fact that they had all agreed to this, and that's one thing the doctor points out, is like, we all made the decision to, you know, to grab that memory worm. We all decided that we were going to do this. We weren't forced into it. You know, there's nothing like that. So he doesn't have anything. Yes, he said that he hates the architect, but there's nothing saying that this is a villainous person that needs to die.
Okay. And incidentally, the whole premise they've been doing as far as the memory wipes and how interesting the structure was. I know you felt the reveal kind of came at you kind of hard and fast at the end there and didn't give you time to really fully appreciate it. But in retrospect, as you said, I really love the fact that as they started piecing things together or piecing their memories back together again, realizing that in order to evade the teller throughout, they had to have as little
the
within
teller
their
path?
Working memory. Yes, the teller path. Had to have as little working memory as possible so that there wasn't enough to sort of draw, you know, show up on the radar, so to speak. And then the planting the briefcases along the way and such. I kind of liked the structure of that. It was like seeing a Rube Goldberg machine start to work piece by piece, but you didn't see the full extent of the machine. You only saw the couple of contraptions, the boot and the mousetrap that was right in front of you.
Right.
And the rest just kind of falls into place as you go.
It honestly, him going through after the fact and placing all the suitcases and stuff like that, at one point, like, I'm sitting there watching it, and I see him set a suitcase down, and the first thing that pops into my head is, the trash can. Remember the trash can. And it did seem very Bill and Ted's to me. Like, okay, I have to go afterwards and set all this up because I already know how to play it out because I've already been through it. And it seemed very like my mind went into a loop and it just like,
we have doctor, to remember it, or it won't happen.
I did steal my dad's keys.
Exactly.
Well, how about some of the individual characters that we get to play with this time around? So we get a couple of running buddies that, you know, Doctor says, you know, call me at the end. But so I don't know if they're ever going to end up using Psy again.
I doubt it.
I doubt it. Yeah.
I mean, yes.
But what was your take on the characters? So, you know, Psy and how do we pronounce it?
Sabra.
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 Sabra. Sabra. I don't know. I thought they were okay. I was upset at first when it seemed like they gave Sabra like a lot of character development and then killed her off. And then I was like, that was way too much thought and an effort into a character that you're going to kill off after she served her purpose. So at that point, I was like, once she hit herself with the thing, I'm like, yeah, I don't think she's dead. I just, no. And, I did like Psy though, because at that point, it seemed like it was pointless to give her that much backstory and then kill her off. But then with Psy, it's like, you know, he had those moments with Clara and, you know, explaining this is why, you know, this is how I am. This is the problem that I've got. You know, and then when he sacrifices himself for Clara, explaining, look, I've got no one or nothing to live for. This is, you know, there's nothing good in my life anymore because I deleted it all. So I would rather give you the chance. And it gave him a lot of character that made me really, really like him before they went and offed him. Yeah.
I have to agree. I was actually, and I made a note of this, that I felt that they could have actually started unfolding him even earlier. Mm. because he did have that opportunity to be this kind of broken character that you felt compassionate for. And Clara could see it. Her sort of maternal instincts kind of kicked in there, and you know, maybe sort of the school teacher's protective element of seeing a young mind troubled over this,
or maybe it was the fact that he looked like someone from One Direction, but you know,
could have been that. You know, when he turned the other way, I love his first explanation. I'm a gamer. That's why I got all this crap in my faces.
Yes, because I, you know, upgrading to an Xbox One isn't a hard enough change. I just go ahead and install it right into my brain. No.
But that USB One doggle that hangs around his neck, like, really, with all the technology on this side of the galaxy, and you're kicking around with something, at least step up to FireWire or something. God.
So what did you think about him, Haley?
I liked them both. For an episode, they were good, you know. Single-use companions. I don't think I ever need to see either of them again. I did think Sabra was pretty much Rogue, though.
Oh, absolutely.
They just copy and pasted her over into the Hooniverse.
That's exactly what I thought, too. As soon as she's like, I can't touch anyone, I'm like, wow, I've heard this before. I don't expect to see them, and I'd be perfectly fine if I don't. But if they do happen to come back and they're treated properly, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind seeing these characters again, because they did do a really good job of building them up and treating them as characters instead of plot devices, which they very easily could have been.
Artie and Angie.
I just threw open my mouth a little.
just bite down. So little things along the way. Yeah, I'm going back through first watch on this. When you first saw the fogged up glass, and she says, you know, are you hungry? And you can't really tell what's back there. Did just for the split second, did your brain go to the 456?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking. I was like, they're not doing that. That's not.
That would have made a crazy dark episode.
Insanely.
I would have pulled the batteries out of the remote. Don't freaking touch it. This is about to get weird.
Yeah, that was the same thought that I had too, because it was just like, it was the same kind of like mist and stuff. Yeah, no, definitely put my mind in a dark place for a moment.
So, so the whole idea of turning a brain to soup, which is, I guess, at least they're no longer pudding brains. So,
well, it's already pudding. He's melting it further to soup.
Warm it as a fondue. You can skip the fondue stage.
Brain fondue. When it's warm, you call it soup.
Yeah. So that I thought it was kind of interesting how they introduced the. You know, this is what the person would break into the bank for, you know, and, you know, Sabra to be normal and not have to, you know, not worry about touching people and, you know, Sai getting his memories back and everything like that. But the question remained, like, you know, what is it? I know why he agreed to it. We see that event. But when that happened, the thought started going through my head is like, what would the doctor agree to break into this bank for? What's the one thing that he would be willing to do that for? And like, I automatically started going through like major things. And then we get into the private vault and I'm like, okay, there's a chair that's backwards. Who is this that he is breaking into the bank for? You know, and I was like, this could have been a tremendous opportunity to reintroduce a character like the Master or River or some random Time Lord that we've never met before, something like that. I'm like, this was a perfect setup for that kind of reveal. And we didn't get that. And I'm not saying that like bringing River back or anything would have been a good idea, but it just seemed like such a great setup that was wasted on this banker character that we've never seen before.
And we'll never see again.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't know. I think maybe a certain degree of that was intentional, so that, you know, to kind of throw you off, especially when you get the little flash moments of the black hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Last time we saw a black hoodie on screen, there was something seriously different going on. But you know, there could have been a lot of things there. You know, it could have been a Hello Sweetie reveal. But I'm okay with the fact that they didn't feel it necessary to do a big callback on this one, especially so late in the episode when it wouldn't even give the audience time to really get a full reaction in before the credits roll. I don't know.
After I watched it the second time, I did appreciate it more. Just that first time that I watched it, I was like, this is such a great opportunity. Like, it just seemed tailor-made for a big reveal like that. And it just irked me that they basically wasted it to let's be honest, rehashed the ending of Hyde.
Yeah.
So that soured my first watching. That's the main thing that got me willing. Last 10 minutes, I was like, okay, no, I'm irritated and I'm done. And I don't want to watch this anymore. And I mean, thankfully it didn't stick around, but yeah, it just bothered me that they didn't do something more with it.
Yeah. See, I thought my first thought like you was River. And then I was like, wait, maybe this is how we're going to finally get Scary Poppins worked in. Mm-hmm. And nope, third week in a row without her.
You know, yeah,
and not even a mention this time around.
I did think that when Cy sacrificed himself to save Clara, like that there was that moment where I'm like, wait, he sacrificed himself. Are we going to see Scary Poppins again? And then nothing happened. I'm like, oh well, they're not really dead anyway. So yeah, it doesn't. But I think what they've done with her is like they showed her in the first episode and really make you think, what the hell? And then introduced her again in the second episode to reinforce that. And now, you know, we're constantly watching for her. We're waiting for her to pop up again. And that's what they want. They want us to still remember that she's there and remember that, you know, there's this underlying thing, but they don't want to have to put her in every episode just to hammer it home. They introduced her, then they set the hook, and now they're just stringing us along.
I will also note the profound absence of chalk in this episode. Thank you.
Oh, the light bulb theory falls apart.
Crap.
Although, you know, I do want to say that this was an episode that had Jenna Coleman in a hot little sexy suit, and yet she was still out-sexied by Keeley Hawes.
It's the hair thing. Swoopy, foofy hair curl.
Yeah, because when they introduced her as Director Kara Braxis, I was like, oh, yes, ma'am. Hello. Yeah,
clone killer.
what was that statement? Like, it's like you'd be a career break for the right therapist.
Yeah, exactly.
Although, you know, we did get the reintroduction of the different colored hallways. It's, hey, look, we're in a yellow hallway. Now we're coloring it green. Now it's blue. Now it's red. Now it's aqua colored.
I just watched that episode of Farscape.
But it actually did kind of work for this one. Like, I mean, the colors were way too overdone to make it like, hey, look, this is different color, so different hallway. But it wasn't like, hey, look, they're in the same hallway again. I'm bored already. It did kind of work for what they were doing at that moment. So it's hard to pull something like that off.
But those are the same hallways, the same trapezoidal arches in the hallways that they used in Deep Breath, where all the clockwork droids were down below. They just pumped a lot of mist in and painted some rivets on the arches. Because I'm looking at them like, this is the same. Yeah, and I flip back. Sure as hell, same width, same height. Is that, well, okay. Kudos to them for being frugal with their sets.
I didn't catch that. Wow. Yep.
Okay. Huh. And the Farscape hallways bend. So they can play.
I was thinking of the episode with the when the ship split into four pieces.
Okay.
And each one was a different color. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But it's funny, in one of the commentaries, they did say they had a bit of a Doctor Who problem where they kept running out of corridor.
Also known as the BSG dilemma.
See, that's why they bend, is because you just have them walk around in a circle the whole time like they do on Star Trek TNG. Yeah.
Well, did you ever see the Sam Rockwell movie Moon?
Yes.
If you haven't, okay, yeah, Haley, you would love this. He's the only person in it. It's a one-man cast. It's a single-man show, and it's takes place. He's got some mining expedition on the moon, and he's out there for, I forget, how long is the stint? He's out there for X number of months or years before his replacement comes. But they built the entire base the station that he's on to scale, and it was just this giant looping tunnel. It was like a habit trail set. And they shot the whole thing, you know, all internally. It was all enclosed on the soundstage and everything. So the cameras, you know, you didn't have any of these kind of vaulted ceilings or anything. Everyone was working inside like a 7-foot head clearance and whatnot. But it was just, they had to figure out all these ways to be able to maneuver. They had to come up with all custom camera rigs to try and figure out how to get the shots they wanted as he's running up and down corridors and whatnot without it looking like the same damn corridor over and over again.
All right.
Endorsement for a great film. There you go.
So there was one moment that I did notice. I mean, I like the fact that Cy kind of called the doctor out and he says, you know, is that why you call yourself the doctor? Professional detachment.
Mm.
And it was that moment that we've all kind of been waiting for ever since, you know, Into the Dalek, when he was like, yep, no, he was already dead, just saving us. And you know, he calls him out on that. And then, you know, Clara makes the excuse for him and he's like, yep, I can tell you've been with him for a while because you're too good at that. And, you know, it's just, it's kind of nodding to all of those fans that have had a problem with it, be like, yes, we understand. This is not normal behavior. It's supposed to be this way, you know, and, you know, just kind of once again reaffirming this is not the 11th Doctor. This is not Matt Smith anymore. This is how he is, and this is how he's going to continue to be. But, and then there was the moment later on when, you know, after Sai had sacrificed himself and the Doctor's trying to find, you know, there's got to be something. Clearly, you know, the architect would know this. There's got to be some kind of logic. And Clara's reaction is like, some kind of logic? You know, and she gets really indignant, and then the scene moves on before she has a chance. But you can tell, like, on her face, she's like, okay, you've gone a step too far from me, and I'm going to let you have it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what we've been seeing consistently, how much stronger her character has become, mm-hmm. and not necessarily just because they're giving her more of an opportunity to kind of spread her wings as an actress, but they're actually writing the character stronger because now she's been put in a position where she can speak her mind more freely and really have at it. Whereas with the 11th Doctor, she often didn't even have the opportunity to get into those kind of discussions because he was off and running, you know, he was right. So dynamic that they couldn't have those tete-a-tetes. So I'm pleased that obviously that she's been given the opportunity to do so, but I'm really pleased that they're actually writing into that way to give her the opportunity to be that voice of, you know, you're out of line at this point. I don't care how old you are. I don't care all the experiences you've had. Morality has its limits, you know, or has its you know, its boundaries at every point. So I'm going to call you on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I almost wish that they had given her a moment to play that out, just like one or two lines to really show that she did have a problem with him saying that before moving, and like let her say something. He's like, no, this is too important. Come on, yeah, or have the door open and it just kind of end the conversation. But still, just for those people that could take the moment to recognize her face and see that she was having a problem with him saying that, it made it nice.
I think next week we'll get that.
Yeah. If,
you know, because he's going to be doing it around Danny and she's going to be like, hey, knock it off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be one of those things where if we get at some point as we start to near the, you know, the latter third of the season, if he starts drifting dark again, mm-hmm. you know, maybe, you know, first, second episode kind of dark and starts making those kind of statements that really, you know, her ears pop up, that she has to be the one to lay in and say, you know, at all this time, I've been giving you, you know, so much leeway for all these reasons. But at this point, I have to, you know, I've got to pull the brake and this needs to be addressed. And she's going to be the one to tear into him on it. I think that could make a really powerful moment, and it would be really beneficial when he's at the brink of making a decision that's very un-doctor-like.
Mm-hmm.
And she can be the one to either browbeat him or you know, be that voice of morality, that reminder of what kind of promises he's made to himself and to those he holds near and dear.
Yeah. I mean, it'll definitely make for some interesting tension later on if they choose to play it that way. But at the same time, you can just let it go and say, nope, this is how he's going to be, and it's always going to rub people the wrong way, but, you know, what are you going to do about it? He's the Doctor.
So. There may be hugs involved.
And always, hugs. Always going to be awkward.
That's how he was rubbing his arm after she let go of him. He's like it stings.
for a minute, it took me a second, like, why, what happened? Why is he so, oh, that's right, it's a hug. Never mind. And it took me a second to recognize why he was doing that. And then once I did, I laughed out loud. It was great.
Yeah.
So are we going to completely ignore the fact that we've gotten a major reveal in this episode? The fact that, you know, the 9th Doctor had Fantastic, 10th Doctor had Alan Z, 11th Doctor had Geronimo, and now the 12th Doctor has Shuddity up, up, up.
Shut up. Or just shut up in general.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times when he goes to silence the room and he's just telling people to shut up.
Well, he's also got the thing.
Yeah, I'm going to do a thing. A thing's going to happen.
We've gone from plans to things.
When he said shuddity up, 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 though, I started seriously thinking of his other character that he's...
Bleepity bye.
Yeah. That's exactly the thing. I was like, oh, yep, okay.
That's what I thought, too.
That is really kind of his thing. Is the itty.
Yeah. But that's one of those things that's going to stick out. Like when people remember this episode, that's the thing that they're going to remember is that line.
Or D, shut up.
Yeah, D, shut up. That was it's like, what did you say? D, shut up and tell me what you said. Because the first time I heard it, I thought he was saying, like, you know, just still excited, saying, like, do shut up or something, but with his Scottish accent. And then I listened to it again. I'm like, no, he said, D, shut up. It was great.
So, yeah, it's the fast talking Scottish brogue is always going to get some people a little thrown. But hey, if it forces you to watch the episode again, so you can pick up on all this stuff. Hey, job
Darn.
Done.
Darn. Oh, no, a lot of people have complained about not being able to understand Capaldi, but I don't know if it's just because I'm used to watching British television and my brain's already wired that way, but I've never had a problem hearing anything you said.
No, not particularly. There's times when Clara throws me.
Yeah, it's just because she talks so fast.
Yeah, yeah. And we ran into the same thing when we were first getting accustomed to Smith, too. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, for just in terms of overall pace of dialogue and things, and they would just kind of blast out, or they'd get into a lot of the cross banter discussions where there was crosstalk and okay, all right, subtitles.
Click. Oh yeah, the first half of series 5, I had to watch with subtitles. Mm. It was rough,
but you know, we may acclimate to it, or just like I said, it's one of those things where you just start getting accustomed to appreciating it on the first watch, just to kind of get through the story. Okay, get to see all the shiny, and then go back again to really pick apart some of the interesting lines that you thought you heard. Because in every one of these, I don't think there's been a single episode so far of this series that I haven't, on the second or third go around, caught some little interesting things that I didn't the first time out, because the lines are either delivered really quickly, or it's done just as the music swells, or, you know, they're doing it as they're running out of scene, or it's a little, you know, just a little dig that's thrown in. You know, because they're so clever with the digs this season, and they love kind of cutting into one another. So,
or you know, even the doctor being slightly self-effacing a lot of times. It's like, oh, you know, scan my memories. Big scarf, bow tie was kind of embarrassing. But you know, and then there's other comments that he's got that just completely win. You know, I still don't understand why you're in charge. Basically, it's the eyebrows.
the eyebrows are going to be the. That's it. And we knew from the get go that those are going to be, you know, the attack eyebrows.
Yes.
They're the second companion of the season.
You know, and I've actually heard a lot of people complaining that, you know, they get mentioned so often because they think that it's a dig against Matt Smith. It's like, you know, all the doctor was missing to be completely awesome was the eyebrows, and now that they've got them, they're, you know, hammering it home that he wasn't adequate. I was like,
that's
really
pretty sensitive.
Digging for that one a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, but it does strike me as funny, though, that we, as a fan base, you know, commented on that so many times over the years. And then, you know, here we've got Capaldi with his eyebrows. Our truly magnificent eyebrows, sir.
They are formidable.
So we did hit to the social medias this week and ask some people what they thought about the episode. Preston did write in and said, I love how the 12th Doctor seems to be generally confused with everything that Clara does. And on the flip side, he just commands every scene.
And right, so even if he doesn't particularly understand what's going on, he's still the boss of the room.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we've talked about how Clara has been getting stronger and how she's been amazing in every episode. And this episode, she had very little to do. I mean, this was Capaldi's show. This was the Doctor in his element, and this was all him. Mm. And, I mean, he really did just completely take over the show.
Hopefully we're going to get the inverse next week. It seems like it's going to be one of those ones where she's... Mm-hmm. You know, trying to maintain control because he's mucking about with her life. And we've had instances of that before, too. The companion-centric episodes where here's what it's like having to deal with the Doctor all the time.
Yeah.
And there's a certain degree of fun with those. So I'm kind of hoping this isn't going to be particularly a shocker or a horror show of an episode or anything like that. This is nothing that's going to be, you know, having to hide behind the couch. Mm-hmm. This is going to be one of those fun ones where you get to see, you know, oh, yeah, you think it's great traveling around with a Time Lord. Okay, here you go.
Yeah. And I think that I know we do have a Doctor Light episode this season. I think that it's the 9th episode, Flatline, is the one that's the one that we've seen the set photos of the small TARDIS. Like, the TARDIS is shrinking and the Doctor is supposed to get trapped inside, and Clara has to handle things on her own. And I remember hearing in an interview that the writer didn't get that memo or something. And so the Doctor is like very heavily in this Dr. Light episode. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But that's, we do have one of those episodes coming that's really just like, all right, Clara, you've got the wheel and let's see what happens here. And then we did get a voicemail talking about how we, our whole problem last week with Listen about the Doctor being on Gallifrey or not when he hit the moment button. So that, let's take a listen to that real quick.
Hey, Gallifrey Public Radio, it's Nathan again. So I'm listening to the podcast on about Listen, and just to talk about the Barn being on Gallifrey or not on Gallifrey, and about the Doctor surviving the blast. You might want to rewatch Jane of the Doctor because the moment says that surviving would be his punishment. So the moment was going to ensure that the Doctor survived it anyway. So I don't know how that might have worked. Clearly the moment was a living being and not just a weapon, so perhaps the moment had this ability to save the Doctor. I don't know, but that was that's the takeaway I took from that the Doctor, that the moment would ensure that the Doctor survived. So, yeah. All right. Thanks. Going back to the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
All right. So, taking a break from listening to the podcast to call us in. That's commitment right there.
I hit pause. That's it. All right. I got to call him on it. So, appreciate that one. So, that's an interesting point. That's one of those instances, I think, where maybe you don't have to give the specifics as to how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
You just see the idea that it did happen,
right,
and let it go.
Yeah. And I honestly had not thought about that, you know, the moment did tell him you're going to survive. That's your punishment. And so the Doctor was clearly ready to go down with Gallifrey to stop it. So yeah. I think that fits. But we do have some news, though. We got some news, and one of the big ones that we found was actually an interview from Stephen Moffat. And I know as soon as I read this, I started clapping and I was grinning like an idiot, because this is just, it's great, because he is acknowledging what a lot of us have felt and putting voice to a lot of our fears.
Yeah.
Let's see. So some of the stuff that he mentions is that, you know, Clara. And he said, this is a quote, said Clara was not a participant in her own story until this series. And, you know, he draws the parallel with Sarah Jane, saying that, you know, do you remember back in the day, Sarah Jane seemed like a rather dull replacement for Joe Grant until Tom Baker's doctor came along. Then Sarah Jane was quite boring for that first year. Then Tom Baker came along and fazoom, she was brilliant. And, you know, that is really similar to what we've seen, because, you know, we all complained about her last series, you know, the how dull she was in series 7B and how we wanted her to be like, you know, the Victorian Clara. And then everything you've been hearing this series is about how amazing a character she is and how she's so such a strong character and it's so great.
It's an excellent parallel. Mm-hmm. The drawing the analogy with Sarah Jane's introduction with Pertwee and the fact that she was, that it just didn't seem like quite the right chemistry. Not to say that there wasn't on-screen chemistry with Coleman and Smith, but just in terms of what you wanted to be able to draw out of the character, it's difficult to be, you know, a shining star in the midst of a supernova, and you know you've got an actor who's just devouring scenery. It's not as easy to get your opportunity to really show your chops, or from a character standpoint, it's hard to develop a supporting character when the lead character is going through all this and more.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the analogy with what happened with Sarah Jane when she starts interacting with Fourth Doctor, because that was a relationship where it brought out the childlike nature of their relationship. They went on adventures and giggled as they jumped into the fray and whatnot. I mean, it was an amazing turnaround for her, because she was being given an opportunity to work against someone who was bringing out different elements. And that's precisely what we're seeing now.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the other things that Moffat says in here is, you know, one of the difficulties with her impossible girl story was that she wasn't actually a participant in it, because she didn't actually know about the mystery. And then he goes on to say that Peter and Jenna absolutely belong together in Doctor Who. He said, you look at Matt Smith in a bow tie and you're looking for Karen Gillan. You just are. So it was tough for Jenna. And that really is, you know, she's got her own doctor now. She's able to take part in the stories instead of just being a plot device to move this other mystery along that she doesn't have any idea about. So it's like everything is really falling into place for this character. And it's just, it's great to hear Stephen Moffat actually, you know, stop Moffat-splaining for a minute and really, really start to break it down, because he does actually get it. He's not just trying to cover up his mistakes. He understands, no, this was a problem, and now this is why it's working now.
Mm. No, I was really pleased to read this too. I think this is one of those things where you had your suspicions that some of these were the decisions that were coming out of the executive producer's offices and such, but it's good to see them in writing, because now you know, all right, it gives you a little bit more faith, I think. Maybe this is one of those few little blurbs and interview segments that can take some of the really seething Moffat hate that's still out there and check it back just a bit, because he knows what he's doing. Whether you agree with what he's doing or not, the man knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
his choices are very specific, and he's very calculating in what he's doing with it. He's not flying the ship blind by any means. So it's kind of nice every once in a while to get that glimpse in and say, okay, yep, all right, I get it. I may or may not agree, but I get it.
Yeah. Oh, and then some other news that we've got is actually what we talked about last week. The Christmas special cast has been announced, and three of the guest stars have been announced as well. We've got obviously Nick Frost, who we did talk about last week. So he is going to be in the show, and that's, we have no details about his character or anything like that, just the fact that he's in there.
He's going to spill a Cornetto on the control console.
He said, I'm thrilled to have been asked to guest in the Doctor Who Christmas special. I'm such a fan of the show. The read-through was very difficult for me. I wanted to keep stuffing my fingers into my ears and scream, no spoilers! So it'll be interesting to see how he does. We've also got Michael Troughton, Patrick Troughton's son, is going to be making an appearance too. So that will be very exciting to see how he fits into the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then last week
we got another recognizable BBC talent in Natalie Gamede, who we've seen in Strictly Come Dancing, which I have not given this show a shot. I know, but it comes up in terms of discussion. It's the viewership has got to be immense because it's because Britain does things first, and it'll be coming here shortly.
Then I don't know who these other two people are. There's Faye Marseille.
Yeah.
Who apparently is from Pride and The White Queen and Fresh Meat, and Nathan McMullen.
Nathan McMullen you should recognize from Misfits if you're spending your time watching it. He was the replacement character, I guess you could say, in the fourth season of the series. So
that would explain why I don't recognize him, because I quit
tapped
watching
out of that for season three. Yeah, gotcha.
Season three ended. I was done.
But he was in the. Was he in Knight's Tale? He might have been in Knight's Tale. Let me check. There's a ring in a distant bell. But anyway,
the one with Heath Ledger.
No, the TV series Coronation Street, Knight's Tale.
Oh, and then the last link that we have is actually if you weren't quick enough on the freeze frame button on your remote, you can actually go and someone has broken down the shot by shot of the mug shots that Cy displays when he's trying to lure the teller.
Right. So. And some of them, you know, as you probably saw, you could even see them in the trailer when they were blipping by. You're like, oh, I saw a Slitheen and things. Mm-hmm. And that's great. But there were others on there that you're thinking, well, did they just make them all up? No. There is a story behind every single one of those shots that went by, you know, whether they came from the series, whether they came from the comic basis. Mm-hmm. I mean, every single one has its backstory. That's, and it's kind of cool.
That was the one that surprised me was Absalom Doc or Dak. Mm-hmm. You never hear his name, so I'm saying it how I want. It's the problem with reading.
Because it's a name in print.
Exactly. You can say it how you want. Like Hermione. But I was surprised to see him because I was like, he's only ever been in the comics. Like, he was never on any of the spinoffs or anything either. So it was interesting to see him pop up too.
Mm-hmm. But, and you even had Because a lot of people also said, oh, you've got Captain John from, so you got a Torchwood tie-in. You had a couple of the villains from some of the Sarah Jane adventure stories. It was just really cool to see the way they were putting that together. It looked like they had a lot of fun in doing a little segment that was coming out of his USB dongle.
No, it's a miniaturized projector, clearly, which, you know, the first time he uses, he sets up directly under a light. Like, there's nowhere else on that wall that would have made a better spot to display the schematics. Like, you pick... Oh, anyway. Sorry. That was one of those things when I watched it again. I was like, really? Like, there's no worse place for you to go. Like, put it on the floor, it would have shown better.
You could all stand over and shadow it. Turn the contrast up. I can't see what's on the screen.
Oh, but that's all the news that we've got for this week. So next week, we are going to be talking about the Caretaker. I don't know. This one looks like... It looks like it could go either way, honestly. You know, there's who was it that wrote it? I know I wrote it down somewhere, but is it?
You've got Moffat's co-writing.
Right. Yeah, Moffat's going to be co-writing it with Gareth
Roberts.
Yeah, Gareth Roberts. That's it.
And we know. I mean, he's got plenty of Who cred.
Oh yeah.
So
I mean, he's the one behind the Lodger and Closing Time, which okay. They've got their great moments, so. But
and they've got a good resounding sense of humor behind the stories as well. So you know this one's going to have Moffat in there to have some of the heart because that's what he does best. So since this is going to be a Clara and Danny kind of relationship episode, so bring him in because coupling.
Yes,
basically.
Yeah.
And then when you want the humor aspects of it, you hand it over to Gareth.
Yeah,
and actually, a little story.
And I mean, Gareth Roberts clearly knows how to write stories based around the Doctor interacting with a companion's normal life. So instead of, you know, adventure off on the TARDIS, this is, hey, normal life, let's see what happens when we put the Doctor into it. So it'll be interesting to see how it works. I mean, it's going to be fun. It's just, you know, again, it's one of those weeks where don't go into it expecting, you know, the dark, heavy, really dense plot lines, and you'll probably come out fine. So
you've got Krusty Doctor the Janitor. Krusty don't like it.
It looks like it's going to be fun. I'm trying to figure out what the heck's up with the Reaper thing, because it seriously looks like one of the Reapers from Mass Effect. If anyone's ever played Mass Effect through, like, the third game, it looks like a Reaper, which, you know, always, that makes sense to me, because it bothered me at the end of that game. But okay. The Doctor would never let that happen to London. I'm sorry.
They're already dead. They just don't know it yet.
Spoilers. But anyway, this has been episode 104 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, shut-a-dee up, up, up.
And this is Gear saying, what do you think of new look? I was hoping for minimalism, but I think I came up with magician.
And this is Haley saying, the eyebrows play.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows by calling 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1477 to leave us a voicemail. You can head to GallifreyPublicRadio.com to leave comments on each episode. There you can also keep up to date on all the latest news and gossip, as well as what's going on in the community. Also make sure to head over to GunnaGeek.com to find out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.